matrimony. And that's the way it went until I was 16 and a half years sober. And Mother and I never talked one time in 16 and a half years with that curtain between. Not once. 16 and a half years went by, and Mother brought a problem of her own to me. It wasn't a bottle. It was indirectly the bottle, but it was somebody else, not her. And we sat for 2 hours and a half with no curtain. And I'm telling you, it was worth the 16 and a half years of sobriety. Just this, to talk with my own mother to that person. Because over the years, she had come to see that something had to have happened, you know? And she didn't understand what it was, but she knew it happened. And so, you see, this is what we're thinking. This is what we're thinking. Yes. This is the way to do it. Go ahead.
That pretty well answers another question that we had. How can we Al-Anons get through to the mothers of alcoholics to let go of their son or daughter? I don't know that you can. The only thing that I know to do is to tell them a little of what this program is, give them some Al-Anon literature, and pray. And let go of them and allow them the right to find out. By just the very thing that Chet was just talking about, by the example, that something quite wonderful has happened to the alcoholic. And I know there are times when it is very difficult. Mothers and fathers have a way of wanting to protect their children from every misadventure, from every hurt. And they, in the name of love, they will try everything under the sun to keep these kids from having trouble. And they don't realize that this is a selfish love and that it takes a greater love to allow their son or their daughter to take the bump and take the result of their own actions and therefore find a way out sooner than they would if they were protected. I might tell you just one little story of this. We had one time in Beverly Hills in our Al-Anon group, three mothers. It was rather a strange situation because they all three were widows. All three of them had been left enough money to take care of them all the rest of their days. And all three of them had alcoholic sons. And all three of them had spent every nickel that they possessed getting these boys out of trouble, setting them up in business, picking up bad checks, bailing them out of jail, the works. And they finally were broke, and all three of them had to go to work, and they finally found their way to Al-Anon. And one of the boys, all three of the boys were still drinking. One of them finally committed suicide. Another one drank a bottle of cleaning fluid thinking it was vodka, and that killed him. And I have never known what happened to the third son. But you see, the thing that was so pitiful about the whole situation was this, that in the name of love, they really had contributed to their delinquency. And it's a terrible thing to even look at because they really contributed to their death. And I don't know how we can get parents to see this. I believe that maybe this is something over which we have no control also. The only thing we can do is to give them an example, to explain if they ask questions, to give them some Al-Anon literature and hope that maybe they will come and find out how to release with love and allow these kids maybe to find a shorter way to this program.
You know, I'd rather say this than anything else that I'm going to say. We as parents, having lived longer and having had more experience, think that we have a right to tell our children. From where we are, we tell them. Now, nobody on earth likes to be told. Nobody wants to be told anything. For me to sit here and tell my boys I might as well be barking up a hollow tree because they don't want to be told. Now, the language of love has no age. The language of love has no age. I never know whether I'm talking to an Alateen group or an Al-Anon group or an AA group or oldsters or youngsters. I don't care. Because all I want to do is share. Now, the padre came in late. You know, he couldn't get up this morning. He came in late. But he's here, and I want to tell this little story. We had a padre, not this one. This one happens to be my love. You know, I'm a heathen, and he's a Jedi. And we get along pretty good. He lives with me down south. I'm about to convert him. But we had a padre, a beautiful man, also a member of our society. And he was talking at Palm Springs Round. And I had the privilege of sitting with him, alone, yak-yakking. And he told me this little story. And it's one of the most fabulous things that I ever listened to. He is a missionary priest. And he was doing a mission in the prison at, several days he was doing this mission down there. And he says, Chuck, he says, on Monday, on Tuesday, and on Wednesday, I preached my heart out. And he says, not one man came to confess. And he says, on Thursday night, I talked as an alcoholic at an AA meeting. And on Friday and Saturday, 50 men. 50 men came to confess. Now, what was he telling me? He was telling me that he had been preaching to these guys, telling them, for 3 days, and then he shared with us, you know. Then he shared with us, and here he said, you know. And so, in our relationship with our children, and with those around us, everybody, let's keep this in mind. We don't want to be told. We don't want to be told, but the language of the heart has no age, and we can share. We can share at their level, all of us, because the language of love has no age. And so let's take this approach, that we share with them instead of telling them and trying to make them not make mistakes. Give them the right. Now, when the boys, particularly our old students, I had given them the right to make their own mistakes. I said, there's no father in the household. You don't need to love me, you don't need to respect me, you don't need to beg. Just let me share with you. And over the years, they bring problems to me, particularly the old students. And I would start right in, and I would say, Bill, Dick, I think this is the way I would do it. This seems to me to be the way to do it. But you don't have to do it that way. Do it your own way. And as a result, they bring pretty nearly anything to me. Up to and including this. When it came time for me to get married, he came to me one night and he says, Dad, I want you to tell me everything you know about a woman. Now, mind you, this is my own son. And so help me, we talk till daylight. No lie. Now, I don't know nothing about women. But we shared until daylight. Now, again and again and again, I would rather you'd remember this than anything else, because it will be the most helpful hint in personal relations with your own kids and the people around you. We can share, but we cannot tell.
Let's see. How can we reach the sober AA and Al-Anon members, parents of teenagers, to get their children to Alateen? Can I answer that?
Oh, again, I think that all we can do is share our experience. Tell them what it is. Tell them how it's affected others that we know. I'm one who is absolutely nuts about kids. I don't find the present generation going to hell. Even our young members of AA, I think they're doing a better job than we are. Because so many of these youngsters, and we have one man in our group that got his first AA birthday before his 18th neighbor birthday. And he's now about 8 or 9 years old. In the program, you know. And these guys and gals seem to find it easier to accept the fact that this is a living problem. And the bottle and the needle and the pot and the pill are symptoms, you know. I was at a meeting the other night where 3 birthdays were had. One of them was 2 years, one of them was 5 years, and one of them was 8 years, and all of them were under 40. And during this meeting, I guess 8 or 9 kids were on their feet, some in their 20s, some in their early 30s. And nearly every one of them brought out the point that actually they hadn't come to the program to get rid of the bottle or to get rid of the needle or the pill, but they'd come to get rid of the big hurt. And in my country, they don't mind saying something like this. And it just, oh, I can feel it with them. They talk about standing on the street corner with a big hole in your gut and the wind blowing through. I know what they're talking about, you know. But they came to the program and they got rid of the big hurt. So they recognize it as a living problem. Much quicker and easier. Some of us oldsters think as long as we're not drunk, we're sober, you know. But again, sobriety is the ability to live comfortably and peacefully and joyously with me. And until I can do that, I haven't got sobriety, you know. And so again and again and again, we can share, we can tell them what these kids are finding. And by George, some of the real early teenage kids are finding answers that curl my hair. They're fabulous. And maybe just that will be enough. Maybe it won't be, but again, that's all we can do. That's all we can do. You see, I can't go out and save the world. I can share with those around me, you know. In that little circle. And I'm reminded of this, and I've got to tell it. It takes a little time, but I can't help it. I used to know a chap who went around the world with Douglas Fairbanks Sr. on the trip where he spent time with all the kings and the princes and the holy men of the world, practically. This chap's name was Alan Boone. He was a remarkable guy, non-alcoholic newspaper man. But he used to come to our program because he loved it and loved what he found here. And he was telling about a conversation they'd had with a holy man of China, and they talked about the great problems of the world, and came late, and it was about time to quit. So Doug Fairbanks Sr. says to this holy man, he says, how are we going to change these systems? How are we going to change these systems? And the guy sort of smiled, and he says, we're not. He says, we can't change systems. Individual purification is the only answer. Individual purification. So we share with those around us. And it's like a wave on the ocean, you know. And when enough people change, the system will change. And you and I have got to see this. We'd love to go out and just clean up Grant Pass, you know. Yeah. Get them all in here, and if they won't do it, get their heads and knock them together. We got some good. Now get in here. Better don't work yet.
In conjunction with their AA meeting. Because, in effect, they have exactly the same problem that we do, learning how to live with another alcoholic. And it's very helpful to them. Now, they keep the two separate because they are two separate entities, but it is extremely helpful. And for the last 6 or 7 years, we have had a monthly luncheon meeting going in Balboa of a joint meeting of AA and Al-Anon women. Now, these are not necessarily the wives of practicing alcoholics. Some of them are and some of them aren't. But if you would go into that meeting and didn't know who was which, you couldn't tell. Because we are trying to find the same answers through the same identical program. And they are living answers and living problems, and it's a terrific thing. And it has formed a bridge between the Al-Anon and the AA woman. It is one of the most terrific things that I have ever seen. And it was so successful that they have started one in Glenna Park now, and it is going strong, and they have anywhere from 45 to 50 women at that meeting every month. And it's quite a thing, and I have a feeling that it will grow. But the thing, we must remember that these are two separate programs. And when we take a collection in that meeting, we divide it and send half to AA and half to Al-Anon, because AA cannot accept money from Al-Anon and Al-Anon cannot accept money from AA or from any outside source. So, but we are cooperating. We are getting together and finding out that we have almost essentially the same problems of learning how to live. And we share with each other and we help each other. And it's quite terrific. There are a lot of AAs who have quite a little resentment of Al-Anon, I think mainly because they do not understand what the program is, and they think we go there to talk about them. But this is not true. This is not true. We go there to do something about ourselves. Do you want to say anything on that?
Again, there's not two answers.
It's all the same.
There are not two answers. There's not one answer for me, a drunk, and another for you, non-alcoholic. It's all the same answer, and I blush a little. Because in the family relations department, now understand, I do not think of myself as a marriage counselor, a family relations expert, or a psychiatrist, or a doctor, or a priest. But in the family relations department, Al-Anon is doing a better job with our program than we are. We drunks come into this program with the excuse of the bottle. And oftentimes think when we have no longer had the bottle in our lives, we've got all the answers. But the Al-Anon comes right off the bat to find living answers, you know? And in many, many cases, they're doing a much better job with it than we are. And this we should not have to admit. But it seems to me to be the truth. Yeah, I think that it's good, both for the alcoholic husband and the alcoholic wife, to get a little Al-Anon in with their AA. I think it's very good. And again, it's not different. It shouldn't be different. It should be the same thing.
Here's a cutie that often comes up in Al-Anon. How do you get over the feeling that you would like to go out and have a good time when your spouse is working the program? Yeah. Yeah. You know, many alcoholics, after their wives or their husbands have been going to Al-Anon for a while, get a little resentful of us because they think we're getting to be too blessed independent. If you're like me, you have become a complete and utter nothing In fact, many of us become complete and utter doormats. And you heard Chuck say last night, those of you that were at the meeting, that the alcoholic dislikes weakness worse than poison. And you know, it's a funny thing, but during the drinking years, the alcoholic seems to have to tear you down until you begin to get the feeling that you're worthless, you're useless, that you don't amount to anything. And it took me many, many years to understand why they do this. But I think I understand it now. It is because of their own self-condemnation, their own hurt. They have to tear somebody else down in order to build themselves up. And we do this too. And it has a chain reaction about it that is real bad, because they tear us down, and then we turn around and tear our kids down. And then our kids go out and tear their friends down. And this seems to be the way it works.
Kick the dog.
Kick the dog. Yeah, that actually happened. One of our girls in our group went home one night from a meeting, feeling real good after a meeting. She still had a practicing alcoholic husband. And she was cooking dinner, and everything was cooking merrily on the stove, and he came in, much the worse for wear, feeling absolutely no pain. And he said, "Where are the car keys?" And she said, "They're over there in my purse." And he went over and got her purse and brought it over to the stove and dumped the entire contents in the food that was cooking on the stove. Well, you can imagine what her reaction was. Her little girl was standing right behind her, and she turned around and hit her little girl with her elbow. And the little girl looked at that real startled and ran in the other room and kicked her brother. And the little brother, not knowing what was going on, ran out in the yard and kicked the dog. That's exactly what happened. Yeah. And here's one more story that I want to tell you. I know Chuck's wanting me to tell it because I think it's one of the cutest things that ever happened in our group. We have a gal that is very, very southern, and she's got the most terrific sense of humor I ever saw in all my life. And she had a practicing alcoholic at home, and he objected very strenuously to her going to Al-Anon. And this one day, she asked him for the keys to the car, and he said, "Why in the hell do you want to go to that meeting?" And she turned around to him very calmly and she said, "I am going to that meeting to find a way so that I won't have to kill you." He handed her the keys and they've never objected since. So. This thing of how do you get over the feeling that you would like to go out and have a good time. Alcoholics have a way of getting so involved in this program and with its work that it seems to many of us that we never have an opportunity to do the things that we enjoy doing, like going to a show or going to a concert or having a party with our friends or something of the sort. And this is just my own personal opinion. My husband has said to me many times, I have griped about this a little bit, and he said, "Any time that you want to get tickets to this or that, I'll go." So do you think I go and get the tickets? No. I sit there and feel sorry for myself and say, I wish he'd get on the ball and get some tickets, and I don't do anything about it myself. Or, if I'm in a different mood entirely, and I choose to go to a show, or to go to see some friends or go to a meeting or anything else, I go. And lately, in the last few years, if you told me 10 years ago that I would accept an engagement to talk in some other part of the country when he wasn't invited and would accept it and go and leave him home alone, I would have said you were crazy. Because I would be so afraid that he would disapprove of this and that he wouldn't it makes me feel guilty, and et cetera, et cetera. And the funny part of it is, the first time I accepted one of these engagements, he was all for it and was just as sweet and dear about it as he could be, and now I feel free to go when I choose to accept one of these engagements, because I am an individual too, you see. And
most of this I was thinking, he was thinking when he wasn't thinking it at all. And we have a tendency to say, oh, if I do this, he'll do that. If I say this, he'll say that. And it may not be true at all. He may not be thinking the way we think he's thinking at all. But when we do something with a sense of guilt, they know it and they react accordingly. And I don't know, maybe I'm too independent. Am I?
No.
I think I'm doing a better job.
This no, once you get out of town. When the cat's away, the mice will play.
I know this, that I have to be comfortable with me. And in order to be comfortable with me, I have got to do my end of the deal. This is a marriage. My husband works hard to make a living. I try to keep things going at home. And unless I am doing as good a job as I know how to do, I am uncomfortable with me. And I think Chet will agree with me that I am doing a better job as a housewife and as a wife than I have ever done in my life before. I used to be a lousy housekeeper. Lousy housekeeper. But I think I am doing a better job than I've ever done in my life. I know I am more comfortable with me than I have ever been. And I feel freer than I have ever felt. And I think that Chuck will agree with me that we have more mutual respect than we have ever had before. And this is a good way to live. Am I right or wrong?
That's the last question.
That's the last
question. I want to talk a little bit.
You haven't got time.
Yeah, I'm going to do it because you're not hungry. You just had breakfast. I got to say this because it's freedom. It's freedom. The thing that brings it to my mind is coming in from Birch the other night, Friday night, I think, when we came down here to meeting. We saw a number of deer. Now, I love deer. I just love deer. One of the reasons I live in Laguna Beach is so I can go through the Laguna Canyon back and forth to my work. And I so often see deer. And I love them. And I invariably look for them where I saw them last, you know. And I invariably see them someplace else. And a few years back, I'm going through the canyon. And I'm out of the area where you could possibly see a deer. There's no deer up here because it's open country. And it's maybe 9:30 in the morning. And deer, a good self-respecting deer wouldn't be out at 9:30 in the morning anyhow, you know. And I look up, and right out there in the open field is the most beautiful big buck you ever saw. Well, it started me thinking. You don't see them where you think they ought to be. You see them where they are. You see them where they are. And for the next hour, as I drove to town, I had more fun with this than anything that you can imagine. Because it went through the whole gamut of human relations. Our own proclivity of putting labels on things and people. We categorize everybody. You know, we categorize our own wife. We know exactly what she's going to do under certain circumstances. We know what she's going to think, you know. So we got to categorize. So she's then of no interest to us. Because we know what she's going to do and what she's going to think. We categorize everybody else. We got ex-cons. Ex-cons. Ex-metal patients. And we categorize them, and they categorize each other and themselves. And it's the most stifling, the most binding thing on the face of the earth, to categorize. It takes all the interest out of life. You see them where they are. You don't see them where you think they ought to be. Now, I was up here 6 years ago, but nobody in this room ever saw me before. Nobody ever heard me before. Because I am not the man that was up here 6 years ago. I am what I was then, plus the experience and the lesson of life for the last 6 years. I'm not the man I was yesterday. I'm the man that woke up yesterday morning plus yesterday's experience and its lesson. You see? And when we come to see this, when we get rid of the necessity to categorize anybody, when we come to see that our own wife is a new woman every morning when she wakes up, what a thing it is. You meet a new person every morning. And as the interest and the value in the relationship is infinite. It's absolutely infinite. It's fabulous. And lastly, I want to tell you this, and I'll bawl, and I don't care. You know how long it's been since I've seen a drunk? It's been over a dozen years since I ever saw a drunk. Now, my plant is at 40th and Alameda. And every time I go downtown, if I have time, I go to the head of 5th Street and go west, because that's our Skid Row. If I've got time, it just draws me like a magnet. Down I go, and I head right down 5th Street. And almost every time I turn into that place, the Black Mariah is coming from some angle or another. Well, I know that Black Mariah inside out. I've ridden in her in chains, you know. And the man on the street knows her too. And he knows the rag picker is sitting right there, and they're going to pick him up. And here's a little wino, and he's drunk as a skunk, you know. And he's got a fist of wine in a brown paper bag so nobody will know what he's got. And he sees this paddy wagon coming, this Black Mariah, and he starts trying to make it in the alley, and he can't make it hardly. He goes down about 6 times, but does he break that wine? No. He breaks his paddy, but he don't break the wine. And he gets into the alley, and I thank God. Thank God, because you see, that's me. That's me, but with the grace of God. That's me, but with the grace of God. And I go on down the street, and here sits the old boy in the doorway. And it's July, and he's got his black overcoat on. And he's got a fifth of red eye sitting right there by him, half full, see. And he's laughing, and he's talking with his friends and having a hell of a time. And they're not there. You know, his friends aren't there. And I can't hardly drive by. I want to leave that car sitting right in the middle of 5th Street and get out and go over there and pick that old boy up and sit him on my lap and rock him to sleep. Because, you see, that's me, but with the grace of God. I used to wear my overcoat in July. I used to meet the people and talk to them when they weren't there. I think one of the toughest things my family ever had to put up with. So often, we'd all be in the same living room, and I'd have company, and they wouldn't have any, you know. And they couldn't understand it. And so again and again and again. See, that's me, but with the grace of God. Right underneath that crud is God's kid, even as you and I. You see? And so we come to see ourselves in all men and all men in ourselves. And there's no necessity of categorizing anybody. I don't know any ex-cons. I don't know any ex-metal patients. I don't know any ex-anything. I know God's kids with problems. God's kids with problems. And so we share best we can with what we got. And lastly, I want to tell you all, this has been a happy, happy weekend for us. I love your country. I'll take you back with me. You know, I need you much worse than you need me. Because, you see, you are many, and I'm one. And so, I would be remiss if I didn't tell you I love you. And I'll take you with me, and I'll pray, my God, that you remain constant in the program and grow and live in joy. God bless you all.
Thank you very much.